Well, good afternoon, everybody. If you don't mind, just putting all your phones on mute for the sake of the conference. My name is Mike Tichef, and I cover Stantec for DNB Capital Markets. Today we're hosting a call to discuss Stantec's prospects in the very active and obviously very topical LNG and midstream market. From Stantec, it is my pleasure to present the CEO, Bob Gomez, the CFO, Dan Lefebvre, and also practice leaders, Bob Seger, who is the Senior VP Environment, and Kurt Morrison, VP Oil and Gas. Also, Crystal Verbiest, Stantec's Manager Investor Relations, will do the forward-looking statements and a disclaimer after me. Just in terms of how the call is set up, we'll hear a presentation from the company that will last roughly 20 minutes, and then we're doing an open Q&A. Just an FYI, we don't have queuing for questions today. Once we're done the formal portion of the presentation, please feel free to ask questions at will. With that, I'm leaving the floor to Stantec and Crystal. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Maxim. Just a reminder to everyone on the call that this call may contain forward-looking statements, including a discussion of our growth strategies. We would like to reference you to either stantec.com, SEDAR, or EDGAR for our 2012 financial review for a complete list of assumptions, material factors, and forecasts. Thanks, and Bob, please go ahead. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Crystal. For many of you on the call, you may have met me. I'm Bob Gomez, CEO. We also have Dan Lefebvre, who's our CFO. A lot of you have had an opportunity of talking maybe to us, but today's opportunity is maybe listening to two of our senior leaders that are here and are directly involved in the oil and gas side of our business. Maybe I'll just let them each have a one-minute introduction of who they are and what they do. Bob, I'll start with you. Bob Seger.
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Bob Seger. I'm Senior Vice President for Environmental Services for Stantec. I'm based in Calgary, and Environmental Services in Stantec is roughly 2,500 staff, about 1,500 in Canada, 1,000 in the U.S. We do a full range of environmental services, and certainly midstream LNG is a big part of our business. Just as a little bit of background, I came to Stantec about 5 years ago with the James Whitford acquisition.
Our other senior person here is Kurt Morrison.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Kurt Morrison. I'm the Vice President of Oil and Gas in Calgary. Under that, we look after the engineering associated with oil and gas projects. As we'll talk about later, a large percentage of that is in the midstream sector. I've been at Stantec now for a little over a year. Prior to joining, I was the President and CEO of Cimarron Engineering, which was acquired by Stantec in August of 2012.
Thanks, Bob and Kurt. I'll just give you a quick overview of Stantec before we dive into the subject matter for today, which is more of the oil and gas midstream sector and what Stantec does in that area. Just as an overview for those of you not familiar with Stantec or not as familiar, the public firm obviously traded on Toronto and New York, started in  1954. We now have 13,000 employees. About 5,400 of those employees are in the United States. About 8,500 are in Canada, a small international presence. We're a very diverse company providing integrated design and consulting services across quite a very diverse spectrum of generally the infrastructure market in North America. We are a professional consulting firm, so we do not do construction. We simply provide design and information to our clients. That's a big differentiator for us. We've been able to grow a very strong firm, providing really, really solutions to our clients. Stantec, from a historical standpoint, really wasn't what we would call a company focused in the oil and gas sector. We started here in Alberta, but really was never a large part of our business. As Bob and Kurt mentioned to you, in the last 5 years, we've done several acquisitions to really position ourselves very well, and we focus quite strongly on that midstream market of the oil and gas sector, as we felt that that was a very strong market for a design firm. For a firm that provides very diverse services, we can provide very consistent results to our investors.
We there?
do that over a very long period of time with very consistent results, and that diversity of services is very key to us. We've been able to achieve 15-20%. And everybody just put their phones on mute at the time, and this way we can just make sure there's no interruptions. There's between 16-20% of compound annual growth, both top line and bottom line, for about the last 10 years. So very consistent firm, and that consistency is, again, driven by the diverse services that we provide. And we felt that 5 years ago we needed to diversify further into providing much stronger services in the oil and gas sector. So today, approximately 25% of Stantec's business is in the oil and gas sector, and about 75% of that is in the midstream oil and gas sector. And we provide those services from an environmental standpoint, which is what Bob Seger focuses on. About two-thirds of the 25% is done in the environmental area, and about a third of that is in the detailed design, which Kirk will speak to. So at this point, I'm just going to turn it over to the experts that are on the call here. I'll turn it over to Kirk, and he'll maybe provide you a little bit better description of what midstream is. And again, there's still some people with their phones not on mute, and we're getting some background noise. So if everyone could ensure right now that their phones are on mute until we open it up for questions. Thanks, and I'll turn it over to Kirk.
Yeah. Is it moving?
There's still somebody with their phone on
mute. Because I saw you after.
Sorry, guys. Can you please mute your phones?
Yeah, but I saw you after. Yeah. Okay,
Kirk here. I'll try to I'll get going here. First thing, Bob Seger and I will probably tag team a little bit on this. But the first thing I thought I'd talk about is what is the midstream market? And in our view, there's a number of definitions, but in our view, the midstream market is getting products to market. So it's processed oil and gas to the final market. And it largely includes the pipeline facilities, for liquids and pumping facilities for gas and crude compression. And it also includes the storage facilities at the back end, which would be big tank farms on the oil side, the liquid side of things, and the LNG facilities on the gas side of things. It's different from the upstream market. Like when we talk about work we do in the oil sands, that's what we turn out of the upstream market. Two real drivers for the midstream market. In Canada, the bulk of our work in the midstream market is focused around getting products to new markets. So on the gas side of the business, it's traditionally gas has moved west to east. And the new market is getting gas to the West Coast, and those are the West Coast LNG products. On the oil side of the projects, our large customer is the United States. We are focused on getting products to other marketplaces, namely the West Coast and the East Coast, as well as additional capacity to the United States. In addition to that, a big focus of our business is getting oil out of the oil sands to existing tie-ins, and as well as getting diluents back into the oil sands from the natural gas business. In the United States, the market is different. The United States are becoming a very large producer of oil and natural gas, and so the upstream business there is much less mature. And so our focus in the United States is really getting that product, getting that resource developed, and getting it tied in there. So in Canada, our upstream business is more mature. The focus is getting that product to market. In the United States, our business is associated more with getting the resource developed and tied in. The midstream market is, the midstream business is our largest, I think as both Bob and I mentioned before, is our largest piece of business right now. And the reason it's the largest piece of business is our clients. That's our client's focus right now. And in Canada, we need to get additional infrastructure in place to get the product to market. All of our clients have multi-year, multi-billion-dollar capital programs coming up, and that's why we are focused in that area. Key driver of our business is the regulatory market, or the regulatory arena. There's a lot, as everybody knows, oil and gas projects are rightly being scrutinized more by the regulators, and so that creates lots of opportunities for our business. And Bob, any comments on that?
Yeah, it's, I think it's fair to say that stakeholder groups are better organized and better funded than they've ever been, and as a result, they drive a lot of issues during the permitting and approval processes for these facilities. And certainly our job is to help our clients navigate through the different stakeholder groups and make sure that the applications our clients put together reflect their concerns.
Okay. Right now, we believe Stantec are the largest firm doing midstream projects in Canada right now. Between Bob Seeger's environmental group and our engineering group, we've got probably in excess of 2,500 people working on midstream projects. On the export pipelines in Canada, those being the LNG projects to the West Coast, as well as the oil projects to the West Coast, the oil projects south, namely Keystone, Keystone XL, and the oil projects to the east, we have involvement in virtually all of those projects at some point. In terms of where we sit in the in the marketplace amongst our competitors, like I said, in Canada, we believe we're the largest firm offering integrated engineering and environmental services. Our goal is to follow our clients south of the border. We have a presence in the United States. You know, we recognize that the American market is 10 times the Canadian market. We're strong in the Canadian market. Our clients are going to the United States, and we're following our clients. We're in the initial stages of growth in the United States. We have a central office in Houston and some regional offices in Louisiana and Pennsylvania. But certainly our focus will be to take our Canadian expertise and leverage that in the United States along with the clients. We thought there was some interest in talking specifically about LNG on this call, so we thought we would go into a little more detail on LNG. And like I said before, LNG is part of the midstream market. It's on the natural gas side of the business. And the LNG business, basically, in our scope, it involves the design, the permitting and design of the pipelines and compression facilities to transport gas from the producing fields to the LNG terminals. And the LNG terminal is a storage facility to store natural gas. You liquefy natural gas at very high pressure and store it in that facility, and then put it on a tanker and ship it over sea. On the LNG side of the business, like we mentioned, there are probably four or five large LNG projects on the BC West Coast right now, and we are involved in portions of the engineering and environmental for all of those. Stantec, how did we get to where we are in the midstream business? Really, it's evolved over time. Traditionally, the Stantec 10 years ago had a group here at Edmonton that were very focused on tank terminals. And that was really a building block for the company. And the business probably really took off in 2009 when Stantec acquired Jake Switzer, and that's where Bob Seeger came from. And that gave us real position in the environmental and permitting side of the business. Recently, my old company, Cimarron Engineering, we joined Stantec in 2012. And we did so because we were a privately held Canadian company, and we needed to get bigger in the marketplace. And so we saw Stantec as a natural partner. We worked with Bob Seeger's environmental people for years. We knew the Edmonton people who were doing terminals work, and it really rounded out our business. So Stantec was an ideal partner for us. So with that group, we've assembled the largest firm doing midstream work in Canada. And like I mentioned earlier, we're leveraging that into the States, and we've set up a small office in Houston and have done acquisitions in Louisiana and Pennsylvania to give us a regional presence. In terms of our the types of services we do, we mentioned we do the environmental side of the business, planning, permitting, regulatory, environmental assessment, ecological risks, risk assessment, emergency response planning. We do the hard engineering design, that's all the civil and structural and mechanical and electrical and process engineering. We provide procurement and construction management services to our clients. And in addition, which we view as a real opportunity going forward, is we provide integrity management services to our clients once the projects are constructed. And integrity management is really helping clients design and implement their integrity programs to ensure, you know, the long-term reliability and safety of their systems. Hey, Bob.
I'll just do a quick wrap-up, and then we'll open it up for questions where you can ask for more detail directly from Bob and from Kirk. But as we talked about, this was historically not part of the diverse range of services that Stantec was providing, but we saw it as a natural fit, being here in Alberta, having a strong presence here, developing a strong presence in oil and gas was a natural fit. We chose midstream mainly because it is much more of a design-focused business. Our clients like to work that way. They look for engineers to provide them solutions. They look for environmental consultants to provide them approvals for their projects. Much different than the upstream area and the downstream area of oil and gas, which is much more EPC, engineering, procurement, and construction-focused. The midstream area is much more of a design-focused business and therefore a natural fit for Stantec being a design firm. That is the same in the United States. So as Kirk and Bob said, we have a strong position here in Canada. We feel that market is going to continue to be strong for a number of years as the build-out of these facilities are planned and constructed. And in the United States, the market is 10 times the size of Canada's, and we we'll follow our clients there, continue to find good companies to acquire to strengthen our platform, and then leverage that ability to be able to provide services across the United States in the oil and gas midstream area. So at this point, I think we'll just pause at this point, Maxwell, and turn it back to you, and you can facilitate and moderate any questions that the participants have.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. And so I guess the way that we'll approach this, I'll ask the first question, and then you know, we'll hear the answer, obviously, from the company. And then please, people on the line, go ahead and ask any questions if you have any. Otherwise, we'll just continue peppering Bob and his team with questions. But maybe just starting to think from a macro perspective, Bob, if you don't mind maybe talking about the size, the addressable market that you feel the LNG / midstream spaces represent for you guys. You mentioned that U.S. is obviously a much larger market, but you know, can we put some numbers around those ad markets? That would be very helpful. And maybe also just in terms of talking about the cycle where we're in, clearly the very low natural gas pricing is helping, but if you don't mind providing any color on that, that would be great as well.
Okay, well, I'll talk to the last question first, and then we'll try to put some size to the market, but what we'll probably give you is pretty vague numbers. They all start with a B. You know, there's billions of dollars of work out there. But from a perspective of how do pricing maybe affect this, because we were asked that question a number of times, that yes, natural gas prices low, that's driving a lot of activity. This activity is almost, I hate to say entirely, but it's almost disconnected from the actual pricing of the commodity. Because there's such a need for moving the product around, that has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed sooner than later. So we're seeing some of our clients progressing with their projects almost irrelevant to what the oil and gas prices are. There is a shortage of capability of moving product in Western Canada. It has to be addressed. So we see that as being a very strong market. It's not then going to be affected substantially by variability of the oil and gas prices on the short term. But why we're seeing such a very active market and one that we're pretty confident in. The size of the market, we had a discussion before this call to try to put some kind of an idea of the size of this market.
really what we see in front of us and all we can tell you is every one of our clients have billion-dollar programs, tens of billions of dollar programs in the next 5 years, all basically building product or building transportation for their product. That market in the United States is roughly 10 times the size of Canada's. It is not as mature because in Canada we have the product ready to move. In the United States, they're still in the production side of it. So timing is good. We're mature in Canada in a mature market, and we're relatively small in the United States in a relatively emerging market. So we feel that we're positioned well. But I don't know, Bob or Kirk, if you have any more insights of, say, the size of the addressable market.
Yeah, I think that's the key idea is our, you know, we're following our clients who are the, our clients are the large pipeline transmission companies. And like Bob said, they all have multi-year, multi-billion dollar projects. In Canada, there's a real push in the next, you know, the next 5 to 7 years to get the export pipelines, done. And then when that ends, then production will have to ramp up, so there'll be more local projects there.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, our impression of what we've seen year over year is that the midstream market is probably growing 4 or 5 times in terms of us understanding what our client needs are going to be. So it looks to us like it's, you know, it's fairly long term. We can see up 5 years anyways where we're going to have this kind of opportunity.
Okay. Excellent. Any questions from the audience?
Maxim, Matt here from CN Pension. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, do you guys have any insights as far as the timeline for these LNG projects? I mean, you know, we often hear about 2017, 2018, but in terms of the design work and the permitting, are we, you know, halfway there? Or are we, you know, 10% there? Can you give us a sense for where we are on timeline?
It's Kirk here. On the engineering side, we're completing what they call front-end engineering design and moving into detailed design. So the engineering on the large projects is probably in the neighborhood of 15-20% complete. The schedule to complete the engineering, you're correct, is that, you know, the time frame for, you know, to get them operational is kind of in that 2018 time frame. So the bulk of the engineering will be done over the next couple of years.
And depending on the project, the environmental work is, you know, either kind of 50% done or something less than that. So it's, you know, I think the estimates that are provided from a broad timeline are close.
I guess just as a quick follow-up, those projects, given the size of the investment, would you expect that the detail engineering be completely done before the investment decision is made?
No, they'll be. They usually reference something called final investment decision (FID), which is normally partially through detail engineering.
Okay.
This is Moji Clear from TELUS. I have two questions. In terms of what Stantec does, can you kind of give us, in terms of the size of a project, what percentage of revenue would you be able to basically have access to in terms of gathering a portion of that revenue? Like, if a project is, say, $1 billion, what percentage of that will the services that you provide be able to target out of that $1 billion?
Yeah, we on the environmental side, typically the upfront environmental costs are between 1-3% of the capital spend. And on the engineering side?
Yeah, on the engineering, on a pipeline project, the actual hard design is probably in the neighborhood of 1.5-2%. When you get into the facilities, like compression facilities or pumping or tanks and that, it's probably more in the 5%. And that's the actual hard engineering cost up front. If we get into procurement and construction management on both sides, it can be another 5%.
Okay.
So roughly the addressable market for us on a capital program, if you combine environmental and engineering, which is what Stantec does, and you do the full suite of services from start all the way through to construction management. That's construction management, not construction, just managing the construction. You're roughly looking anywhere from 9 to 12% of the capital costs. So you translate that for a $1 billion project, yeah, it's a very significant market for us.
Okay. And then in terms of your expansion into the U.S., can you comment on what strategy you might be taking to basically do that?
Kirk gave, one is clear strategy is following our clients. So clients like TransCanada, Enbridge are moving into the United States markets. Clients like Spectra and Kinder Morgan are clients that we do work for in Canada that we can transfer that relationship to the United States. So we're currently already doing that on a preliminary basis with all those clients. But we've also acquired some firms in the United States, albeit smaller ones, and have grown that organically, where we have approximately 150 people in the United States that are doing similar work to what we do in Canada, as Kurt said, out of Houston, Louisiana, and in Pennsylvania. So we focus our platform in that location. We will continue to look for companies and acquire firms that will then allow us to more quickly expand our service offerings that we can offer our clients down there, then leverage the capabilities we have in Canada with those relationships. So it'll be a program of some organic growth, but really fueled by doing acquisitions over the short term over the next 2 years to expand into the U.S.
Okay. And then finally, in terms of risk that you see out there, what kind of, if I'm looking at the opportunities that you basically talked about, what risk is associated with it? Like, what can derail all this LNG program?
I guess the biggest risk would be there currently exists a pretty strong variation in pricing between Asian markets, for example, and North American markets for natural gas. The narrowing of that gap could result in delays or cancellation of LNG projects if that differential pricing isn't there anymore.
Okay.
Even though we said the projects are somewhat not susceptible, if there is a significant change, that would probably cause delays. But from an oil plan, I think from an oil standpoint, maybe not as susceptible to that that change. But in the LNG side, yes.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. On the oil side, I think from a Canadian perspective, it's more about getting products to a market or to a place where it can get to a market. So I think less sensitive to pricing differential.
Okay.
And on the oil side, probably regulatory is a risk going to the West Coast, probably less so going to the East Coast.
Yeah, that's spoken like an engineer. Your regulatory risk is an advantage and an opportunity.
The tougher the regulatory setting and the more the stakeholder groups are involved, the better it is for environmental design services.
That's an answer.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, Matthew again. I have a question on the when you say regulatory approval, is there a, for example, I'm referring to the LNG projects again here, is there a specific type of permit that we should have our eyes on that's harder to get? Is it the water usage? Is it other environmental assessments? Is there one that you see that's more difficult to get, or they're sort of all lumped in a big package of approvals? Yeah.
Well, you know, for the LNG facilities themselves, they're regulated under the BC assessment process, so that would be the primary driver. And I think once that approval is obtained, then specific permits like water use would follow, likely without too much difficulty.
Hi, it's Alda from Agenda Capital. I have a question in around the midstream infrastructure needed to help process the gas. I don't know if you can speak to what some of your more of the gas clients are saying they may need in terms of the infrastructure from the gas processing side in terms of stripping the liquids out of the gas or making more pipes back or to the export market. Is that an area they're also providing engineering expertise in?
On the engineering side, we're not involved in the design of the large gas plant. Bob Seeger's group would be more involved in the regulatory side.
Yeah, we do some work certainly on obtaining the environmental approvals for the processing facility.
Is that something that's also active in terms of more focused by your gas clients?
Yeah, I think it follows that, you know, as the demand is increasing to get natural gas to the West Coast, to the LNG facilities, certainly that gas will need to be processed, probably in, you know, North Central British Columbia primarily, and there will be opportunities as well for regulatory and environmental permitting work associated with those facilities.
So most of our Stantec work in the LNG is in, I would say, the facility, supporting an LNG facility and doing the environmental approvals. The actual process work within those facilities, we don't have that capability. But that'd be the only thing missing at this point.
Yeah, just in terms of the project, like the gas plant, so we typically wouldn't do, we would do the, out of the gas plant, so you need a compressor, a compression facility to take it to the LNG terminal, and that's the part we do. We would do the downstream of the gas plant all the way to the LNG terminal.
Okay, thank you, great.
Hi, I'll take a stab. This is Jamie Kozak from North Growth Management. This question is a little bigger picture than just LNG. If you think about the level of activities you guys are currently doing and the projects that are on the pipe going forward, roughly how much of your business would be or would fall under the domestic activity of moving stuff just within North America to North American markets or to export terminals or for export rather? And so how would you see that sort of now and going forward with the projects you guys see? Thanks very much.
So on the engineering side of the business, I would say we are probably 50% strictly, you know, keeping it on the, you know, within the country, and the other 50% would be export pipelines.
And I think overall we would estimate that about 20% of our business is associated with midstream activities. So really, the definition you just supplied pretty much covered it.
Yeah, so 20% of our business today is associated with the transport of oil and gas products in North America. That is, whether it be towards the places in North America or to a coast exported outside of North America. And what could the potential of that, as we grow as a company, that 20% could become something like 25%. So it's 20% of a $2 billion company today. It could be 25% of a $3 or $4 billion company in the future.
Jamie, did I ask that question and answer that question right? I interpret, like, we've got a large program going on taking crude oil out of the oil sands and then bringing diluent back in. So that's the way I interpret it. I think, you know, of our midstream work, probably half of it is focused around that, and the other half is focused getting off out of Canada.
Well, I was thinking more from a North American perspective. So, like, if you look at moving it from Canada to the United States and it stays in the United States, I'd consider that more of a domestic type of activity as opposed to, you know, when you talked about natural gas pricing differentials with Asia and whatnot and potential implications if those converge. I wouldn't necessarily look at domestic activity to really be impacted. Maybe some of the export activities could be. So I was just kind of thinking about that from a North American perspective. What would be self-contained from changing differentials of international prices?
Okay. So if it was self-contained in North America, it would probably be closer to Bob's number there, 20%, 80-20, something like that.
Okay, great. Thanks.
This is Jeff Lowe from Lower Investment. One question I had is, looking more broadly forward, as Stantec tries to gain more business with global clients and to your comment of working with people like Enbridge and TransCanada, but if you work with companies such as Chevron, for example, that who have large midstream projects globally, is that something that Stantec would eventually target and think about working, or is that too far beyond the scope of geographies that Stantec wants to target?
So we actually have a contractual relationship with Chevron for global projects, and so depending on where a project might be located, we would certainly consider providing those services.
And on the engineering side, Chevron are a partner in the Pacific Trail Pipeline project. They're a 50% partner and operator, and we're working on that project for them.
So as we continue to grow our capabilities and have even more capabilities in the U.S., the question is, would we consider doing international projects for those more national and international clients? Yes. As we get more comfortable with our capabilities, we would then be more comfortable taking on those larger projects in, say, Turkey or in Asia. But today, you know, we see a big enough market just here in Canada and in the United States. So one step at a time, but as we grow, yes, we would basically work on any project our client would be willing to take us, as long as we can, you know, keep our employees safe.
And then to follow up on that, would you consider that the midstream market is, or the midstream activity in Stantec is different than other divisions within Stantec? Because traditionally, the comment has always been made that the design services Stantec offers is very local in nature, and generally the preference is to work on local projects and have local staff on the ground before engaging in larger projects.
Well, that's a good comment, because yes, it is different, but it is somewhat local. It has a local context to it from a point of view of where your relationship is. If you notice, both our expert individuals live in Calgary. You know, if you're going to be doing oil and gas projects in the United States, you better have a Houston address. So yes, even though the projects are national and the clients are national, you still have to have that local context of being close to where your client is and where the decision makers are. Canada, it's Calgary, in the United States, it's Houston. But you're right, it's a little bit more of a national type of approach than a lot of the work Stantec does. But as I described, it still has that local context that you still got to have people going to meetings where your clients are, and you still got to have that relationship at that local level. So there's still that context. So it is similar, but it does have some differences because it's much more of a national type program. And we're using people from Florida and Atlantic Canada on projects here in Alberta. So that's part of it. You know, certainly we can bring that national approach to it, but it still has some local context.
I think the other comment I'd add to it, and that was one of the things which attracted us to joining Stantec, was that local presence. Like, it really enables us to be much more efficient on the large linear pipeline projects, like on the project which is taking oil from Alberta back east. You know, we've got Bob Seeger's environmental people in virtually every province working on the project, and it just gives us a local, gives us a competitive advantage over our competitors.
And in the United States right now, our work is growing because we have people on the ground in Pennsylvania where the shale projects are. So, yeah, I think that was a great question, because it does have that national type of approach to it, and it does have that context. But every part of our business still has people on the ground locally that have got to be delivering the product.
Understood. Thank you. If I may ask a final question on a different topic, following up on the earlier comment about the percentage of value in terms of the hard design work, I was wondering if you could estimate very roughly a market share you would have in some of the large projects in the LNG terminal and facilities transportation area right now.
Well, on the engineering side of the business, I would say we are in the 35 to 40% of the business.
And on the environmental side, they independently came up with the same number.
They were writing numbers down in the paper, but you didn't even very quick enough.
About 40%, I think, of the big pipelines. And probably on the LNG side, we probably have more like a 50% market share on the environmental work going on today.
So I would say I'd call that a healthy market share at this point in time, given the extensive project.
Absolutely. And then just to help us understand the curve of revenues, so about 50% or less of environmental permitting work has been done, and then call it 15% of engineering. Does the revenue stay constant over the next year, or does it rise significantly because a lot more work needs to be done once you get to the detailed design?
Yeah, on the engineering side of the business, the next 2 years ramp up as we do detailed engineering.
Okay.
Yeah, on the environmental side, the bigger dollars are kind of front end loaded, so I would think we can anticipate pretty stable revenues from what we've seen for the next 2 or 3 years.
Right. And then is there a plan to absorb Santec capabilities and capacities if there are no more projects beyond 2 to 3 years?
So, from our perspective, from the Cimarron who joined Santec last year, that was the advantage we saw to it, because we were going to be really busy here in Canada, but beyond that, we needed somewhere to leverage their services, and that's where we thought going to the States would be the opportunity for us.
Yeah, and certainly the U.S. is going to represent a big opportunity, but, should there be any sort of downturn from a midstream point of view, the good thing about environmental services is that the type of skill sets we have are transferable between the main sectors, including mining, power, for example. The environmental assessment process and the type of work we do is very similar, so we can just kind of ebb and flow, grow with the different sector opportunities.
I guess I'd make one last comment. I mentioned that we provide, integrity management services. And those types of services, which involve developing plans and helping clients implement those plans, those all ramp up after the projects are built. So, that's certainly an area that, if there's more facilities built, integrity management services increase.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Oscar.
Bob, in terms of, obviously you have a tremendous penetration in the market share right now in the midstream space. Is there a necessity to think about how you would address process type work over the medium to long term? Do you have to be there? How do you view this market? Or is it way too competitive?
The upstream side of the business, right?
No, the process type work against something that... For example, like TBI or Worley Parsons would do on an LNG plant, for example.
I'd start there. We are very busy right now in the area that we're in. We see our growth in probably two areas, like I mentioned earlier, the space and the type of business that we're in. And then in Canada, the export pipelines are built, that will... create additional, that'll cause the upstream business to increase. The producers will have to ramp up production to be able to fill pipelines. So our focus would be going forward is to move more into the upstream side of the business, and that would get into process type work, but on the upstream side, I think gas processing and oil sands work.
More the SAGD side of the business.
So exactly, yeah.
That's certainly an area where most of the production in the future from the oil sands will come from SAGD. Again, an area that is not as well penetrated by the big companies as the typical mining work is. So we certainly see that moving into that space today is certainly a focus for us, because if not as busy, there's opportunities for us to move into that space today. So certainly it's an area for growth for us for the future.
Okay. And then looking at additional cross-selling opportunities, obviously you have a very strong transportation practice as well. And right now, obviously, railing oil to various locations, I mean, that's a pretty active market. Is this something that you can also address on a going-forward basis? Are you present in this market? Any color would be helpful.
Yes, we are. Like Kurt's talking, yes, we are looking at rail projects that are focused on oil.
Right, and that's, you know, that really allows us to draw on the expertise of, you know, other Stantec practice areas, because, you know, Stantec's been doing rail projects for a number of years. We've got the liquid handling pumping side of things covered there. So we are working on those right now.
Can you quantify it in any way, shape, or form?
Other than it would be a small percentage of what we're looking at.
Small percentage, I think, but probably we're working on 6 or 7 active projects right now.
Okay.
In terms of scale of projects, those projects are significantly smaller than the pipeline projects, just by nature.
Since the rail infrastructure largely is already there.
Right. And, maybe in terms of the margin profile, is there any difference in, for example, the midstream work vis-a-vis environmental, transportation? I mean, obviously when we talk about the blended margins, everything seems to be roughly in line, but do you mind maybe expanding whether you believe that those margins are sustainable, because you would assume that additional competition will be looking into the space as well? Just any help would be helpful.
From a gross margin perspective, there is a difference between the environmental work and the engineering work, and that's just historical, the way the projects are, who our competitors are, how our clients approach that business, the types of contracts. But as competition comes in, we really haven't seen our margins erode. You certainly have to be giving good prices to our clients. You have to be competitive. But more importantly, you've got to have the resources. You know, if you have the resources, if you can get the approvals, if you can meet their deadlines, if you have the technical capabilities to get the job, you just need to be competitive. They're not looking for the cheapest price. They're looking for a competitive price, but more importantly, they're looking for resources. And they want to make sure you can get the job done. So that really doesn't result in a lot of margin pressure. If you don't have the availability of charging whatever you want, so you're not going to have margin scope increase. But really, we haven't seen our margins decrease. They've been steady through this busy period.
I echo that. Our clients are most concerned about delivery, being able to deliver. You know, engineering is a small percentage of the overall capital cost, so being able to deliver a good, efficient product is the key for them.
And Bob, on that point specifically, in terms of attracting talent and so forth, where do you sit right now in terms of the labor? Is it difficult to attract people? Anything that you can mention there?
Well, I mean, as you know, this is a people business, and it is competitive. We're all competing for good talent. But two things I think that we have an advantage. One is we were working on some of the best projects, some of the biggest projects for the best clients. That attracts people. You know, people want to work on those projects. They want to be able to say they were involved in those projects. So you get the projects by having good people, but then you can attract even more people by having those projects. You know, that being said, it's a very competitive marketplace, and you've got to ensure that, you know, you are meeting the requirements of giving them the best possible contract you can. I think we're as good as anybody else in that perspective. We're very focused on our staff and keeping them, and you know, that was something that we've focused a lot on in the last year, with really focusing on our brand and the people, why people want to work here. So we have the same issue as every company in this space, attracting and retaining the best people. We feel we do a very good job of that. And if you continue to attract good people, the clients feel that you have that capability, and they're going to continue to give you work. We also have the capability of leveraging that across North America. We can bring people from Florida, as we said, from Atlantic Canada, and have them work on projects here in Alberta, so we can leverage that. Basically, what we're doing is outsourcing to areas within North America, not outsourcing to India, which is a lot lower, less risky, and a lot easier to do. So that capability also helps us.
Thank you.
This is Jeff Lowe from Lower Investment again. A question for Bob and Kirk on cross-selling, so maybe a bit of a broader discussion, but I know Stantec has...
Okay, which Celestia can you explain quickly?
So I know Stantec has focused on cross-selling more in the last few years. I'm wondering if you have specific examples of how, from either Cimarron or from Gatewick, for plugging into the Stantec network and getting tangible results from that, and then as well, how has the culture of cross-selling, and how does how are people encouraged to talk to different offices and cross-sell? How has that evolved over the time that you've been there?
Sure. So let me give you an example. I'm, for example, account manager for TransCanada Pipelines, and as a result, I'm trying to maximize revenues for our services across the enterprise for TransCanada. So that drives collaboration with Kirk and his team, with their transportation group, with their buildings engineering group, with their water group, all of which intended to drive revenue. So our focus on clients drives cross-selling or integration of our service package. And it's worked very well, and we've got great feedback from senior leadership in TransCanada, for example, that they really like the opportunity to do business with a company that can provide all those services.
Yeah, I echo that. You know, I think I said earlier that was one of the that was a key reason for us at Cimarron joining Stantec, was because, you know, we felt those sorts of relationships and ability to deliver the complete package was good in the marketplace. So it's been very positive.
And has been that process evolve or get better over time, or has it always been at a very strong level?
Integrating services even inside a single company is always challenging, but we've seen a lot of good progress over the last 3 or 4 years.
And in your opinion, is Stantec at a point where it is a very efficient cross-selling organization already, or are there still many more opportunities to do much better at integrating and having dialogue between different offices?
You know, from our perspective, as Kirk here, you know, we've been here a year and a bit, and you know, we've seen some real benefits. And I think over time, as we all get to, you know each other better, that will just get more efficient and better.
So did they pass the test, Jeff, with answering the question similar to the story you've been giving? Because I think that's a pretty good story. You'll never get perfect at it. It's always a process where, as we bring companies in, it's a learning curve. But I think they spoke pretty clearly that, yeah, you know, it's a focus we certainly have. And I think people get excited over being able to sell something to a client that they haven't been able to sell before. So.
I think they answered very well. Thanks, Bob.
And so maybe to follow up on this cross-selling opportunity question, is there anything else which is missing right now in your stable of addressing the oil and gas, LNG, midstream space in terms of capabilities? I mean, obviously, you've spoken about the geography of addressing organically the U.S., but if there's anything else that you feel you have in order to compete even more effectively.
On the engineering side, I have the two things, larger presence in the States, and over time, you know, a larger presence in the upstream market here in Canada.
You've got all the capabilities.
I think we do, and one area that we have that many of our competitors don't is Aboriginal partnership companies, where we work through an Aboriginal entity or First Nation group. We have about 10 of them across northern Canada that serve us well in terms of providing access to certain geographic areas and help us realize our clients' needs with respect to stakeholder engagement with a lot of those communities.
And by doing this, we also help the Aboriginal communities by providing them jobs, providing them skill sets, basically training their people. So it was something that really was brought to us by Jake Swickford, and we've been able to grow that, those partnerships. So it's fairly unique that I think Aldona Foss said a lot of our competitors are now trying to do this, but we've been doing it for a number of years now.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of M&A multiples, again, in the oil and gas space, do you feel that there is still a bit of a premium attached to that? What are the current expectations from a seller, from a well-run company, for example, right now?
Well, Kirk's smiling because he knows how much we had to pay for his firm just a year ago. So, yes, I mean, in a very hot market that we feel still has great opportunities for growth, you're paying at the upper end of those multiples. But it is always the synergies of the two companies together that you really will be able to then feel comfortable that that's a reasonable multiple to pay. There's still companies out there. That's a focus for us, certainly in the United States. It is a growing market with many years of growth still attached to it. So if you're looking for companies, their expectations are certainly at the higher end. They know that too. They live in that space and they know the potential. But for us, you know, we've always been able to find that common ground, always pay a fair and reasonable price to give them the opportunity and still leaves an opportunity for us to continue to grow. I think we've shown that in our track record.
Just for the sake of timing, any additional questions on the line right now?
This is Jeff again. I have one more if I could. Just quick question on Snake D. So the comment that the engineering group would like to go more into those projects. I'm wondering specifically what you would do on a Snake D site, and then what are the hard design market opportunities in terms of rough sizes?
Well, the design opportunities would be to basically look at everything from the outside of the well itself. So it would be the well pad, processing facilities. So that's the opportunity there. In terms of project size, you know, there are 20,000 barrel a day plant, 10 to 20,000 barrel a day plant would be a good size for, you know, would be a good size for us to move into. And what more can I tell you on those?
Capital costs, roughly.
Capital costs,
20,000 barrel plant?
They would be in hundreds of millions of dollars, yeah.
Okay, is that 5% rule still a good rule of thumb?
Yeah, on the design side, yeah. And then the procurement and construction management systems would, you know, probably the complete package there between design and procurement and construction management is probably the 10-15% range.
Great. Thanks, Bob.
And maybe just one last question from me here. When we look at the Australian experience in relation to LNG and the runaway inflation and so forth, how can you help right now your client as an engineer to hopefully align, you know, that and hopefully suppress the inflation dynamic on a going forward basis? Is it a lot of offshoring? What exactly can you propose to a client to control this dynamic in Canada?
You know, we believe the Canadian market is, Canadian labor, at least the engineering side of the business, which I can comment on. I think that the Canadian market is different than the Australian market. You know, we've had the Australian companies a few years ago recruited our people hard. We've had some people go down there and come back, and it's definitely a different labor market. We think we're probably a little more efficient, a little more productive, and I think our employees are probably a little more realistic. So I think just the
you know, the demographics in Canada probably support it a little better. And I think our clients, you know, our clients have learned a lot from the Australian experience, and I think that's probably why they're you know, very focused here right now.
Okay. Excellent. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we're out of time, unfortunately. I'd like to thank the entire contact team for making themselves available for an hour out of their extremely busy schedule. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.